Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to call the Senate Education Committee to order. It's approximately 3:31 on Thursday, March 15, 2016. Let the record show that we have a quorum to do business. Present Senator Gardner, Senator Huggins, Senator Giesel, myself, Senator Dunleavy, and we may have Senator Stevens with us, although he has indicated earlier he's got some business, state business, that is time sensitive he's going to try and deal with. Again, if you could turn off your cell phones, that would be great. Purpose of the meeting today is to hear three bills, SB 191, limit abortion service providers in schools, SB 190, exemption from post-secondary education regulation, and House Bill 76, Governor's Council on Disability Special Ed. We're going to start out with invited testimony on SB 191, limit abortion providers in schools. First, we'll take up 191, and the bill was first heard on March 3rd. And we had about a 3.5-hour public testimony on March 10th. Public testimony is now closed.
Yeah, that would help, I guess. Thanks. So we are hoping to have four individuals testify. We are hoping to have Lacey Moran from Planned Parenthood Anchorage, Education Manager, online. We are hoping to have Joshua Decker, and I see that he is online, with ACLU. Mario Bird, who's an attorney in Anchorage. And Dr. McCulley, interim commissioner. I always have to figure out if I'm saying the right title. Interim commissioner of the Department of Education is also here. So with that, I'm going to invite Joshua Decker with ACLU online, and we're going to be able to ask questions. I'm going to try and shoot for 15 minutes each at the most. I don't know if we'll need Dr. McCulley for that long, and I know that she's like many of us, very busy. So we're going to start with Joshua Decker online. Mr. Decker with ACLU, are you online?
I'm here, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes. And if you can introduce yourself for the record, again, who you're representing, and just begin your testimony on the bill. I think all of us were in receipt of your analysis of the bill a couple of weeks ago, and if you want to just give a brief overview of the view of ACLU in terms of the bill language, and then if there's questions, we'll send them your way, okay?
Thank you very much, and again, thank you, Chair Dunleavy, for letting me testify, and thank you for members of the committee. As you mentioned, sir, we emailed the members of the committee a written testimony back on March 3rd. I think just to distill it, SB 191 poses deep constitutional problems, and it's problems that cannot be remedied because what the bill is trying to do, the end of the bill itself, is unconstitutional. It's not simply a problem of trying to get to a constitutional goal through unconstitutional means. The goal itself, it violates the Alaska and U.S. constitutions. One of the troubling things about the bill is it's so broad. You know, as members of the committee are aware, this bill prohibits anyone who works for or is a representative of any place that performs abortions from discussing any topic at all in the public schools. It's not simply a carbon copy of SB 89 that prohibits individuals associated with abortion services providers from discussing sexual education and sexually transmitted diseases. SB 191 would prohibit anyone from discussing President Lincoln. It would prohibit an employee of a hospital from going to school and teaching kids CPR. And this employee of a hospital would not necessarily need to be connected at all with the hospital's obstetrics and gynecology practice. It's a flat ban on any subject, and the people that it bans are incredibly broad. Further troubling about this bill are the draconian measures that it imposes. In the example where a cardiologist from a hospital goes to school and teaches students there about CPR, the hospital itself would be fined $5,000 per student, and if you figure that, you know, the school has has, let's say, 150 students, you're looking at almost $1 million of a fine to the hospital. Also, the school official or the teacher who knew that the cardiologist was going to teach CPR would lose his job. We're deeply concerned that these prohibitions violate Alaskans' right to speak freely and to associate freely, as well as they violate the Alaska Equal Protection Clause, which stated simply is that the government may not pick and choose, the government may not pay favorites, particularly based on a safe constitutional legal medical procedure. And everyone agrees that the government has the ability to design curricula and to say inside the schoolhouse that teachers have to talk about this and not that. The government certainly is able to tell math teachers that they have to talk about calculus. They're able to tell history teachers they have to talk about the founding fathers and President Lincoln. What the government may not do, however, is to tell a math teacher or a history teacher what they can or cannot speak about or spend or how they spend their free time outside of the schoolhouse. When public employees are on their private time, the government may not use what they choose to do during their private time as reasons to penalize them with public employment. This bill poses many deep, profound, and unfortunate constitutional questions, and because of that, we hope the committee will not pass that. We also quickly mentioned in our letter, abortion is certainly a politically freighted issue, but it's one that the state has repeatedly tried to legislate against. And unfortunately, the state of Alaska, if you look at the supporting documents in our letter, has spent about $1 million of taxpayer money defending these unconstitutional bills. And that $1 million figure does not even include what the state has to pay its own attorneys, its own internal costs of these suits. And because of those deep financial burdens to the state in a time of fiscal crisis, and because of the bill's independent, deep, profound constitutional infirmities, we hope the committee decides not to pass it. If there are any questions from the committee, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Decker? I'll start off with a question, Mr. Decker. Do you agree or disagree that the school, the state, the government has a right to limit what outside groups can be inside of a school during school hours?
Through the chair, the school is, the government is able to exercise control of the school. The problem, though, the government cannot exercise that control in a discriminatory way, which is what happens in this bill. What the government is saying is, if you work for or represent institution, a women's care clinic, a hospital, etc., that performs abortions, we are singling you out. The government is not saying, however, that any other individuals are singled out. An individual who works for, say, the Crisis Pregnancy Center would not be banned by this law. And it's the singling out of certain individuals based on what they do with their time that's concerning. The government has to have a legitimate constitutional interest when it acts. And so if the government is going to limit who can enter into the public schools, it has to demonstrate that there's a legitimate constitutional interest, which we have not yet seen in this bill.
So just a follow-up. So do you agree or disagree that the schools, public schools, K-12 schools, are not necessarily an open access forum for any group to come in if they so choose?
We agree that, through the chair, it's well settled that schools are a limited public forum, that they are not a completely open public forum, but there are innumerable cases dating back to the 1960s in the U.S. Supreme Court that delineate the amount of control and the amount of censorship that schools are able to exercise. Through the chair, schools are limited public fora, and both limited as well as public are salient there. And the problem with this bill is it regulates people. The bill does not discriminate against location. It doesn't discriminate based on content. And this bill applies to every topic, from sexual health to President Lincoln to geometry to calculus. This bill unconstitutionally discriminates against people based on where they, who they are, what they say, with whom they associate, and how they spend their time in their private lives outside of the schoolhouse gates.
And I appreciate that. And part of running a bill is to have folks, that's part of the, sending it through multiple committees, is to have folks take a look at it, ask questions, see if there's anything that can be improved upon the bill. And we do have an amendment today that I think addresses some of the issues that we'll be offering up here in a little while. But let me ask one more question. I'll ask, then I'll go to members of the committee. And I'm going to use examples, and I'm going to caution folks that these are just examples, that there's no, how do I word this, underhanded reason for doing this. But let's say, for example, the Americans for Prosperity, or a Koch Brothers subsidiary, nonprofit, wants to come into the schools and wants to teach economics or government. Does the school have to allow that to happen? Mr. Decker?
Through the chair, I just want to make sure I understand the question. The question is if an economic group like Americans for Prosperity or the Koch Brothers wants to come into the schools and teach about economics,
right.
Do the schools have to let that group come in and teach that subject? I want to make sure I understand.
Yes.
The question. Okay. No. Through the chair, the school does not. But what the state of Alaska cannot do is pass a law that says anyone associated with a organization that preaches the virtue of public, of private enterprise and Lockean libertarianism is unable to enter into the schools and teach a certain subject or any subject whatsoever. The schools, we should trust schools and principals and teachers to, on a case-by-case basis, sensitive to local concerns and what's in the best interests of their particular students and their families, to make those decisions based case by case, as opposed to having a blanket law that takes that freedom of choice from the schools and the school districts and limits that freedom of choice in an unconstitutional, discriminatory way.
So you're, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that the state, again, help me if I don't misunderstand, but the state cannot create a law that limits certain groups from going into the schools to, for lack of a better term, teach, discuss, et cetera, their, what their group stands for?
Through the chair, if the state is going to try to pass a law and try to impose those limits, it needs to do it in a constitutionally neutral way, and it needs to demonstrate that by raising those barriers, the state is pursuing a legitimate government interest. The state cannot simply act through fiat. I think we need to flesh out the hypothetical a bit more to illuminate what the state's legitimate government interest is in saying either the Koch brothers or Americans for Prosperity as specific groups, and if it's specific groups, that may pose a bill of attainder problem, which is a separate constitutional infirmity, or even a broad category of groups that expand upon the virtues of private enterprise and limited Lockean classical liberal government, why those organizations cannot go into the schools, why the freedom to make that decision should be taken out of the hands of individual teachers and individual principals.
Yeah, and just one last question. I know I said it twice already, because I probably could spend hours talking with you, Mr. Decker, and I hope someday I get that chance to do that. If a school wants to allow the local Catholic Church in to talk about family values or relationships, there's a chance that they probably won't be able to do that, correct?
It depends on what the Catholic Church, the Church, it would depend on what the Catholic Church is teaching. Certainly, the freedom, the First Amendment's freedom of religion is going to, I think, at least pose some hurdles that the school would have to navigate through to make sure that the Catholic Church is discussing things in a way that is secular and is not proselytizing.
Right. No, I appreciate that. I'm not trying to cut you off, but I've asked a number of questions, so I'm going to open it up for senators to ask questions if they have any. I appreciate your time, Mr. Decker. I really do, and I appreciate your comments. We're going to leave you now, not because we don't like you. It's because we have other people that need to testify. But I appreciate you making yourself available, and I appreciate you being part of this discussion.
Thank you very much. If there's further questions that we can answer, more than happy to do so.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Next, I'm going to ask Lacey Moran with Planned Parenthood. If she's online, then we'll go to Dr. McCulley, because I think Dr. McCulley will be pretty brief here. So, Lacey Moran, are you online?
Yes, hello, I'm here.
Great. Can you identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and give whatever testimony you'd like to give, and then we may ask you some questions.
Great. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy and committee members. My name is Lacey Moran. I'm an education manager with Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest in the Hawaiian Islands. And I'm here today to urge you to vote against Senate Bill 191. By passing SB 191, we are limiting resources to our already strapped schools and not allowing them to partner with much-needed community resources. I'm a member of the education team, and I've provided education presentations, resources, and materials to several communities across Alaska using medically accurate, age-appropriate, and culturally sensitive lessons. We work with schools and districts to ensure that these lessons are vetted and aligned with their district curriculum standards. And additionally, these lessons have been approved by the Office of Adolescent Health for medical accuracy and age-appropriate standards. Parents have the opportunity to opt their student out of this education, and we have always valued the opportunity for these conversations to happen at the home. In fact, we have partnered with schools to offer parent workshops so that these conversations will continue outside of the classroom. Planned Parenthood currently offers educational services to schools in a variety of ways. Aside from being invited to provide education presentations in the classroom, we have a thriving teen council peer education program both in Juneau and in Anchorage. As you've heard in prior testimony, teen council is an opportunity for teens to become trained on sexuality topics outside of the school and then assist in classroom presentations. Outside of classroom presentations, we are a resource to several schools, districts, public health nurses, and local community organizations that desire access to comprehensive and medically accurate sexuality health information. All of this will be in jeopardy if Senate Bill 191 passes. Districts will suffer, schools will suffer, and most importantly, the youth of Alaska will suffer. As you've also heard in previous testimony, Alaska leads the rates in STDs, particularly chlamydia. They lead it in child sexual abuse, and we continue to have higher than average rates of unintended teen pregnancy. Research has proven time and time again that comprehensive, medically accurate sex education is a key component in reducing these risks in teens. So again, I urge you to not pass this bill, and we'll take any questions that you have.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Can you tell me, and thank you for your testimony, can you tell me about what part of your curriculum includes any discussion of abortion?
through the chair. Thank you. So our curriculum that we offer in public schools does not contain any information about abortion services.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
And so if it comes up, if a child or student asks a question about abortion, what is the response?
Through the chair, thanks again for that question. I will say it's fairly rare that questions or conversations about abortion do come up in the classroom, but if they do, we acknowledge that it's not part of our curriculum, and then we refer them to their parents or a trusted adult.
Thank you. And understanding that there might be a lot of variation in how it happens, can you describe, or are you familiar with the opt-out provision and the sort of process that goes through what kind of information parents get before they make a decision or how they're notified, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. So I will say that across the state of Alaska, every district has a little bit of a different protocol. We work with districts to try to provide them with information that will be helpful to communicate to parents. So, for example, that might look like us providing language or even a form template letter that they can send home to parents. Some districts opt to have a curriculum night so that parents are able to come view curriculum and we've participated in that. Others encourage teachers to actually have this information directly in the syllabus at the beginning of the school year. And again, every district is just a little bit different. We try to work with each district to meet those needs.
Senator.
Thank you. And do districts or does a principal or somebody designate a person always see the curriculum before you're into the schools, before kids do?
Thank you. Again, every district is a little bit different, and so that person or people is going to be a little bit different in each community. We try to identify working with that person or people before we go into the classroom. Oftentimes, that does involve, majority of the time, if not always, that involves several people overlooking the curriculum. The teacher, the principal, as well as district staff generally have their hands on it. So it's really important for us that we're following protocol, but really a lot of that is in the district's hands.
Thank you. And actually, I have one more question. Has it ever happened that you were invited to at least open discussion about coming into a school or a district and the district, after reviewing your curriculum, decided against using Planned Parenthood?
Through the chair, not to my knowledge has that ever happened. There's been several schools that have chosen specific lessons based on their district curriculum, but I do not believe there's been a time where we have completely been turned away.
Thank you.
Questions from other members of the committee? Ms. Moran, how many schools would you say that your organization deals with now?
Through the chair, thanks for that question, which is really a two-part question. I think there's some clarification in regard to this bill of our involvement. We have a variety of different ways that we interact with schools. So the part of the question might be that we have direct presentations in, but the other piece that is equally as important regarding this bill is that we provide resources and materials. So if you can clarify which piece you're interested in.
Well, let's do both.
Great. Through the chair, thank you. So in the last year or so, we are in approximately 30 schools, between 25 and 30. Every year looks a little bit different. And then we provide materials and resources to several more, and I don't have an accurate number for you.
A dozen, half dozen, just some ballpark.
Through the chair, thank you. I don't even think I feel comfortable ballparking. I would just say several more.
Okay. And how are the lessons presented? Is it a day, a week long, month long, year long, a specific amount, a specific time period? How would you characterize how these lessons are presented?
Through the chair, thank you. So every school district again is a little bit different. Their needs are a little bit different depending on which community we're working with. So in some schools, it may just be a one-day presentation, but I would say more often than not, it is several days. And that may be we come in for 3 days. It might be we come in 1 day a week for 3 weeks. There's generally a multiple lessons that are being taught over just one.
What would you say would be the minimum number of days to deliver an effective lesson or presentation?
Through the chair, I think that that's a great question, and I don't feel equipped to fully answer, because I do feel like there are several pieces of information that would need to be part of that equation. So with the size of the school, what are the topics that are trying to be covered, and then what are some of the district curriculum standards that we want to make sure we're meeting. So once those are taken into account, then I think I could answer that a little bit better.
High school, middle school, elementary school, what grade levels or what type of schools do you present in?
Through the chair, thanks for that. We do present primarily in high schools, and then depending on the district, there has been some need in middle school for that as well. So, for example, if there's an eighth grade health class where comprehensive sexuality education is part of their standards, we may be presenting in there. But I would say more often than not, it's going to be high school and above.
Any history of elementary school at all?
Through the chair, we are currently not offering education in elementary schools. It's not really part of our standard. But what we do offer is parent workshops. We call them puberty nights, where we work with that age group, elementary students, as well as their parents at the same time. And that's something that we generally do outside of school hours, but it sometimes does take place on school campuses.
Thank you. I think it's going to be the last one. It's the teen outreach program, right? The TOPS program. Can you describe that just a little bit of detail, and who gets involved? How do folks get involved? And what is the goal of the program?
So through the chair, just to confirm, are you talking about the teen outreach program or teen council?
That's a good question. Why don't we start with teen outreach program, and then I guess we'll ask about teen council.
Great. All right, so let's start with the teen outreach program, which I will say the teen outreach program called TOP, we are no longer offering here in the state of Alaska, but it's a youth development program that is not a Planned Parenthood curriculum. It's an evidence-based positive youth development curriculum developed by Wyman, which is an outside curriculum developer. And we were offering that program specifically here in Anchorage, and that was based off of a grant that ended last school year, so that's not something that we're currently offering. But youth development is a really strong part of our curriculum, so we believe that education should involve making sure that youth feel safe, protected, and that they also are gaining healthy behaviors and life skills in the process of receiving that education, which is really the basis of positive youth development. And then for teen council, which I know is the second part of your question, I know we've learned quite a bit about that in previous testimony. It is a peer education program that's about 25 years old. It's currently being rigorously evaluated to become an evidence-based program. The peer education program is a training program outside of the school, so this is not something that we work directly with schools to offer teen council, but the benefit of teen council is that teens get 80 to 100 hours of training per year, and they're able to utilize that training in partnership with health educators in classroom and similar settings to then offer peer education to their peer teens.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you said that the TOP, T-O-P program used to be offered in Anchorage, but the grant ended. Who was the grant from?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. So we received funding from the Office of Adolescent Health, so that's a federal grant.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. So what takes place in Juneau? Is it teen council?
Through the chair, yes. So we have teen council is offered in Juneau as well as Anchorage. And then we also offer family programs, so I mentioned those before, as well as just basic direct education and resources to several schools and partners.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And do you have also a program for college-level students?
Through the chair, thank you. That's a great question. We do not currently offer college-based programming. We have been a resource to several of the universities around the state just through providing resources and materials. There has been some cases where some of our educators will go and guest lecture in a class or be a guest speaker, but we currently do not have a college-based program.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I've heard from some students at UAA, I believe, who are part of a program, and I thought it was a Planned Parenthood program. The name escapes me. Are you familiar with it, or do you know what I'm talking about?
Through the chair, so I believe you're talking about Generation Action, formerly known as Vox. And so that is a student-based group, and they do provide, or they do some events and work kind of closely with our organization, but is considered a separate group outside of our education department.
Thank you.
Additional questions for Ms. Moran? Ms. Moran, I want to thank you very much for making yourself available and having a discussion with us and taking questions. And I am sure that we'll probably have more discussions as time goes on.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I'd ask Dr. McCauley to come forward, please. And the reason I asked Dr. McCauley to come forward is I just want to find out if this bill would impact in any way HB 44 that was passed last spring in the special session. And I don't know even to this moment 100% if it would or if it wouldn't, so hopefully we're going to find out. So Dr. McCauley, if you can state your name for the record, who you're with, and I will ask the question again.
Susan McCauley, Interim Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development.
So some of the feedback that I received is that folks may have been concerned that if this bill passes, that it would somehow negatively impact the ability to carry out HB 44. I'm trying to find the right words. I want to make sure I'm as accurate as possible. If this bill would somehow change the nature of HB 44, which some of us refer to as Breeze Law and Aaron's Law, mm-hmm. could you talk on that issue?
Certainly, Chair Dunleavy. The element of HB 44 that has gotten discussion with or consideration in terms of other proposed legislation were the training programs required for sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness and prevention, as well as for dating violence and abuse. And there has been, you know, consideration in terms of whether, as other legislation is proposed, whether what is now provided for with Aarons and Breeze Law is in any way in conflict. With Senate Bill 191, the limitations or prohibitions, so to speak, are not content specific. They, as has been stated, they have application for who the individuals are who are providing instruction. They're not specific to any specific topic. And so in terms of consideration of what was House Bill 44, there is not, in my opinion, nor with regard to the legal counsel I sought, there is not conflict there. This says nothing about opt-in or opt-out for students. It simply addresses who may or may not present on topics in general, not topics specifically.
Questions for Dr. McCauley? Senator Gardner.
Are you aware of any other statute in Alaska or elsewhere or even school district policy about who may or may not address students that has not setting aside the topic other than being appropriately licensed or trained?
I'm not aware. My apologies through the chair, Senator Gardner. I'm not aware of other education statute or regulation that speaks specifically to who may present.
Thank you.
May I interject something on that issue? Are there any other questions for Dr. McCauley? We do have a statute in our books, and we've had it for some time, since 1966. It's 1403090. It's titled Partisan, Sectarian, or Denominational Doctrines Prohibited. Partisan, I'll read it, I'm reading it now. Partisan, sectarian, or denominational doctrines may not be advocated in a public school during the hours the school is in session, A teacher or a school board violating this section may not receive public money. We were working with Ledge Legal to try and get a definition. I think most of us assume that we know what denominational means, which is a denomination of a specific religion, most commonly Christianity. We're trying to figure out actually what partisan means. In other words, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Group, I think, lists several hundred, quote, hate groups. They consider them hate groups. And many of them are legal groups. Many of them are not illegal, although for some they may be distasteful. We're still doing a little work to find out, for example, if a school asked, I'm sure I'm going to get emails on this, if a school asked the Nation of Islam to come in and talk about race relations, or if they asked the American Nazi Party to come in and talk about government, schools don't have to allow any and every group that want to come into our schools to present. And some may consider these to be partisan groups. They have a specific view. They want to transmit that view. But long story short, I just interjected that because we have had on our books a statute since 1966 that limits, when I say the who's, limits what can be brought into a classroom in terms of a worldview. Are there any other questions for Dr. McCauley? I just don't want to keep her any longer if we don't have to. Yes, Senator Stevens.
I'm sure that I can really make this question clear. Having served on a school board for 3 years, president of my school board at home, it seems to me that the school boards have a responsibility for deciding what's going to be taught and who's going to teach it. Would you have any reflection on the school board's responsibility or the district's responsibility in the material that's presented to the students?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the statutory and primarily regulatory language regarding curricula is that decision is traditionally left to school districts. That is a broad direction in regulation regarding what differentiates between the Department of Education's role and the local school district's role. And for the issue of curricula specifically, our current regulatory language indicates that as a responsibility of the local board.
Thank you. So a district could decide that they wanted Planned Parenthood in a district or they wanted Planned Parenthood out of the district. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, under the current statutory and regulatory language, that's true.
Thank you.
Quick question, just to follow up to that. Can a school district currently refuse to implement HB 44, which was a statewide law that was implemented last year by this legislature? If the school district says, no, we don't want to do it?
Chair Dunleavy, they could not.
Thanks. Any additional questions for Commissioner, Interim Commissioner McCauley? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
We have one last person online via testimony. Mario Byrd. Mr. Byrd, are you online?
I am, Senator.
So, Mr. Byrd, if you can identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and if you can speak to this issue of 191, there has been some constitutionality issues called into question. There has been some, I would imagine, legal issues called into question. We've had three previous speakers that have helped, I think, with this discussion. And if you can speak to us as to what your view is on this issue, that would be great. So if you can identify yourself for the record and who you're with and begin your testimony, that would be appreciated.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Mario Byrd. I'm an attorney at Ross Minor Byrd in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm also a board member of Alaska Right to Life. I'm a product of Alaska's public schools from kindergarten through 12th grade. I graduated from Nikiski High School and then went to the University of Notre Dame and graduated law school from Ave Maria School of Law, and I'm currently in Anchorage and practicing. So I understand the chair wants some comments regarding the current version of Senate Bill 191. I would preface this by saying that Alaska would not be the first nor even the second state to pass this sort of legislation. In 2000, 2007, the state of Missouri passed legislation that banned abortion providers from marketing and teaching in public schools. And then again in 2014, the state of Louisiana passed similar legislation. Both Missouri's and Louisiana's legislation specifically stated that abortion providers could not teach on health topics or human sexuality. Louisiana's legislation also included the phrase acting on behalf of, as in no employee or representative acting on behalf of an organization, individual, or any other entity that performs elective abortion shall engage in any of the following activities. So the current version of SB 191 lacks two key phrases included in Louisiana's legislation, acting on behalf of, as already mentioned, and then also the fact that it's related to a health topic. Mr. Decker's testimony pointed out that somebody who is a representative or an employee of Planned Parenthood could not teach on any topic under the current legislative language. These omissions could pose a problem, as Mr. Decker's pointed out. I think he brings up a valid point. In my opinion, I think that the amendation of SB 191 to include the phrases that were used in Louisiana's legislation would be not only desirable, but it has the virtue of not being challenged legally in either Louisiana or Missouri, to my knowledge. So after my review of the legislation, I think there may be some sort of a legal challenge, especially when you have the director of the ACLU testifying before a Senate committee that there is a legal issue. And the way to avoid that would be to insert some language that narrows what a representative of an abortion provider could in fact teach when invited into a public school.
Has Senator Dunleavy, has either of those two states that you mentioned have two laws that are similar to what is being proposed? So it would appear that has there been a constitutional challenge to those laws? Are you aware?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware. I've also seen the memo that's up on the Education Committee's website from Mr. Norton of the Colorado Freedom Institute, and my assessment is the same as his. There hasn't been any legal challenge in any court of jurisdiction in either federally or state that I'm aware of.
And would you agree that the only body that can determine the constitutionality of any law is a Supreme Court?
Well, now you put me to it. The Supreme Court of this state and the Supreme Court of the United States of America have jurisdiction to determine the constitutionality of the laws as it is commonly understood. As far as I'm aware, there's no state that would include Alaska that has ruled that this sort of language would be unconstitutional due to singling out an abortion provider. And certainly the state of Missouri and the state of Louisiana have followed suit, and there's no federal court decisions to the contrary either.
The only reason I ask that is, you know, it must be me, but oftentimes when I put a bill together, I'm told it's unconstitutional. I just don't know how that happens because it's never been challenged or it's gone to the Supreme Court. So I just didn't know if there was a special constitutionality clause for myself. But anyway.
Go on with anger for you.
Okay. But I just want to make sure that that's the body, really that's the body that determines the constitutionality of any law is the Supreme Court.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can tell you that my personal views aside, that is the status quo and the orthodoxy of most jurists in this country. So yes, insofar as that is the body that would decide what the constitutionality of proposed SB 191, if it were made into law, yes, that is the conventional wisdom.
Okay, and just mentioning on the record again, we do have an amendment we're going to offer here before this meeting closes that I think is going to address some of the issues in terms of association of individuals. Any questions for Mr. Byrd? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have several, and thank you for your testimony. I'm not an attorney, and I sometimes struggle with sort of certain kinds of concepts in the law, but one of those is bill of attainder, and as I understand it, it's where there's really just where it's targeted against one agency or individual. If that's roughly correct, can you tell me how many abortion providers are in Missouri or Louisiana, the other two states that have laws similar to the one that's proposed here?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I'm not aware of how many abortion providers are in Missouri or Louisiana.
Can we assume that it's more than one?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I would agree. If there are more populous states than Alaska, and I would assume it's more than one as well.
Okay, thank you. And if I might, Mr. Chair, and speaking to the fact that there haven't been constitutional challenges in those two states on their laws, and understanding that the chair is going to be offering an amendment that maybe addresses some of the concerns here, Alaska's constitution is often held up as sort of a model, written after the other states and used with the benefit of hindsight there. And other countries have come to study our constitution. Can you describe the ways that our constitution is different from theirs, at least in the aspects that might impact the constitutionality of this provision? That's a complex question. If you can't answer it, then that's okay.
Sure. No, through the chair. Thank you. Are we leaving the bill of attainder through the chair, or are we? Should I answer the bill of attainder question first and then go to the other one?
Well, if you can answer that first, that'd be great.
Okay. So the bill of attainder, generally there's a, that's from the Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence of you can't specify that somebody's going to be thrown in jail or have some sort of a penalty without due process of law. That was abused before our founding fathers came over, and that was one of the things that was hardwired into our federal constitution. So with regard to a bill of attainder, I've seen the memo that was drafted by Kate Glover for Senator Gardner, and that cites a case in the Middle District of North Carolina, a federal case, where there was an injunction granted for bill of attainder purposes. In that case is Planned Parenthood of Central North Carolina versus Kanzler, 804 Federal Supplement 2nd, 482. That was in 2011. That injunction was dropped, and to my knowledge, the whole lawsuit was dropped because the North Carolina legislature then revised their budget without explicitly singling out Planned Parenthood in their budget, and that was what had caused the federal judge to bring up the injunction. So with regard to SB 191, I don't see the sort of singling out of a person or a corporate entity, as was the case in that federal case cited by Kate Glover to Senator Gardner. So that's how I would read a bill of attainder lawsuit working in Alaska as well under the federal constitution. Now, as far as the other question, how our Constitution might be studied and how it would apply to SB 191, I'm sure that volumes could be filled. Again, with reference to the memo by Ms. Glover to Senator Gardner, I see the free speech and association rights for teachers, first of all, the amendments that would narrow the scope of the language, I think would take care of most of those concerns brought up in Ms. Glover's memo. And then with equal protection concerns, I think as has been previously discussed at this hearing, a public school classroom is not a forum to which anyone is entitled to have free speech rights absent some sort of showing that they're a teacher, they have they're hired. The common phrase is the government as employer has many more rights than the government as sovereign. And I think that's come up in part of the discussion that I've heard with Dr. McCauley as well. So tuition providers and their employees and representatives to have no access to students within the classroom. That, as it's already been pointed out, this is something that's already required of religious, denominational, or partisan instructors per Alaska law, and that's been on the books for 50 years now. So I don't see constitutional concerns under the Alaska Constitution. I would also add that there's another provision in the Alaska Education Statutes, Section 1420.095, the right to comment and criticize, not to be restricted. This was something that was passed also in the 60s when presumably teachers were concerned that they would not be allowed to comment and criticize on the actions of school boards, and it bolstered their right to free speech insofar as they are allowed to engage in comment and criticism outside of school hours regarding school personnel, members of the governing body of any school or school district, to the same extent that any private individual may exercise the right. And that I think bolsters the idea that a teacher would have all sorts of rights outside of school hours to associate or speak on whatever topic they may be interested in doing. And that was something that was mentioned in Ms. Glover's memo as well, pursuant to Article 1, Section 5 of Alaska's Constitution. So I'm sorry, I've not belied the stereotype that lawyers are full of hot air, so I will yield to the chair at this point, and I apologize, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Okay, I have a couple other questions, or actually they're related questions. Regarding the bill of attainder, if we, and I don't know if this is a fact or not, we've only had testimony about one abortion provider in the state, elective abortion provider, shall we say. There may be others, but I haven't been able to confirm that. And if Planned Parenthood is the only abortion provider, does not the bill of attainder then come into effect here?
Through the chair, I would say no, because it doesn't single out a particular person. If events or evidence has shown that this is the only abortion provider that is seeking to enter into schools and teach on health topics, and that no other abortion provider has ever sought to do that, would that evidence make a finding in favor of the fact that this is a bill of attainder under some other wolf in sheep's clothing? I don't think so. And I go back to the Employment Division versus Smith, which is a different context, but a religious case, First Amendment case, where there's a statute of neutral or general applicability that was found to be constitutional until Congress went back and did the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act in the early 90s. But this is not something that that would be sufficient to, in my opinion, find a bill of attainder, because it's not singling out any one individual or entity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if I might go on.
Yes.
I think we're going to have to set that aside and let the courts decide eventually, should that bill ever become law. One thing you said kind of late in your comments was that we already have in statute a statute which says that there'd be no certain parties, in your case religious groups, would have no access to children in the classroom. And I just want to point out that that's not actually what the statute says. What it says is partisan, sectarian, or denominational doctrine may not be advocated during school hours. Not that proponents of doctrine would not have access to schools, but that they couldn't teach their doctrine during school hours. That's a different matter. So let me think. I think I have one other question, Mr. Chair. And you talk in your testimony a little bit, or rather you wrote in the written testimony, you were talking about a case, Heffron versus Krishna Consciousness, and it was a case that ruled on restrictions that cannot be based on content or subject matter of restricted speech. Can you speak to how targeting one subset of sexual health education providers, being educators associated with abortion providers, how does that sort of connect with the Heffron versus Krishna consciousness case?
Through the chair, I'm sorry. Written testimony, Heffron, Krishna consciousness. Is this from Mr. Norton's memo?
Oh. Yes. Am I confusing the testifiers? You're right. It is.
Well, let's see.
So he's a different organization. You're the Freedom Institute of Colorado versus the Colorado Freedom Institute? Oh. Okay. Same organization, different individual, I'm taking it.
No, I'm sorry. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, my name is Mario Bird. I'm an attorney based out of Anchorage, Alaska. I've read Mr. Norton's memo. I did not author it.
Thank you.
But if you'd like my opinion, I'm happy to tell you.
Thank you. I'll just withdraw the question.
Okay.
Any additional questions for Mr. Bird? Seeing none, Mr. Bird, we appreciate your time and your testimony and your willingness to answer questions, and we look forward to potentially asking you questions in the future regarding this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. So at this time, I'm going to offer an amendment. So based upon public testimony and discussion with Ledge Legal, I offer an amendment referenced as 29-LS1269/A. One for the committee's consideration. So we're going to label it as amendment number one. Senator Giesel, could you please move the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for discussion. I'm going to ask Kristen McDonald to come up front and identify herself for the record and just discuss the amendment that's being offered. And the hope is that this amendment will deal with some of the issues that came up during the testimony. And again, I think when you run a bill and you hear testimony, you can get some very good ideas, and so to improve the bill. So with that, Krista, if you can identify yourself for the record and talk to the amendment.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Krista McDonald, staff to Senator Dunleavy. As Mr. Bird mentioned in his testimony, there were two key pieces of language that he felt would make the bill stronger, and we've heard this reiterated through public testimony. With the clarifications in this amendment, Senate Bill 191 maintains that a captive audience of students should not be subject to presentations by abortion services providers during the school hours. So the first change on page 3, line 26, following representative, would insert the words acting on behalf. Previously, the language stated that any employee or representative of an abortion service provider may not deliver material or instructions to students. This change will clarify that a representative must be acting on behalf of an abortion services provider to violate the law. This should resolve concerns that the language was too broad and would reach beyond the teacher's professional duties.
A question, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Are we working from a version A of the bill?
Yes, through the chair we are.
When you read this amendment in place, the language, I didn't hear the language or affiliate, and that's something that I think is an issue. Was that intentional or just an error?
Through the chair, I believe you're referring to the third change, and that is on page 4.
I haven't looked at that yet. I'm sorry if I'm lost. On page 3, line 26, it's amendment number 1. I mean, the first part of amendment 1. And the current language is an employee or representative of an abortion services provider or of an affiliate of an abortion services provider may not, blah, blah. And with the new language, it would say an employee or representative acting on behalf of an abortion services provider or of an affiliate of an abortion services provider?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that's correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you. Just want to make sure.
Please continue.
All right, and the second change is on page 3, lines 28 to 29. Delete any topic to students at a public school, and the language inserted would read any health topic, including human sexuality or family planning, to students at a public school during the hours that the school is in session. We feel this change will narrow the prohibition on topics that an abortion provider or affiliate may teach to health and human sexuality. With the proposed amendment, the language would be in line with both the laws that were discussed before in Louisiana and Missouri. Neither of these laws have resulted in a lawsuit, and it is well settled that states have the authority to govern public schools. In addition, this amendment will address the concerns that we have heard in public testimony regarding an individual's association outside the school by clearly stating that the language in the bill relates only to the hours that the school is in session. The third change is on page 4, line 12, following representative. Again, we're going to insert the language acting on behalf of the abortion services provider or affiliate. This portion of the amendment again brings clarity that the individual must be acting on behalf of the abortion services provider or affiliate to be in violation of the proposed law.
Question, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. On the second part of amendment number one, will you put in the limitation to during the hours that school is in session? Do the portions of that section, such as distribute materials or display materials or provide materials, are those still in the bill as a blanket prohibition, or do those only apply during school hours?
Through the chair to Senator Gardner, it would be during the school hours.
So, thank you.
Any additional questions on the amendment? Seeing none, I withdraw my objection. Are there any additional objections to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment passes. Are there any other additional amendments from the committee? So with that, I'd like to move this bill. Is there a motion to move the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 191, version 29, LS1269/alpha, as amended, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Objection by Senator Gardner. Do you wish to speak to your objection, please?
Well, partly I need time to kind of reflect on these amendments as how they apply. And it's hard for me to do that if I don't see it put together. You know, I thought to myself, oh, I'll take this back and look at it in context. Delete any topic. So, yeah, I would like to wait until Thursday.
Okay. We're moving the bill today. So I'm just letting you know.
Well, then I'll keep my objection, but I was going to vote against it anyway.
Okay. So we do have an objection. Are there anyone else that wishes to speak at this time? The objection is maintained.
Chairman,
Senator Stevens.
I would like to speak. I realize this is going to pass out, but I'm quite concerned about it. As a school board member, former school board member, I'm concerned when it says that a school board member may violate the law who knowingly it caused the district not to receive state funds. That concerns me. I'm concerned about,
it seems to me like there's a lot of protections in our current system. If a parent does not want their child to receive sex education classes, they can opt out. And in addition, the school district can decide that as well. I think this is just state overreach into school boards and into parents, and so I'm quite concerned about it. I don't think it's a good bill, and I'm opposed to it too.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Gardner.
Thank you, and I'm just going to do a little riff on sort of my thoughts about this bill. First of all, I don't see what problem the bill's solving. If you don't want any talk of abortion in schools, just say so and be done with it. And any school district has an opportunity to say that and make it clear in their contract with the providers if they want. If the issue we're trying to address directly is abortion, one very good, very effective way to reduce abortion is to reduce the number of unplanned pregnancies and information about how things work is of great value in that. And as parents, we, you know, of course, we rarely, rarely does a parent approve of young children or teenagers being sexually active. But the fact is, it happens all over the world. No culture, no society has been able to prevent it. And certainly we know in Alaska that, we don't prevent it. We also had testimony about how students, when they do have questions and they're willing to ask, they maybe won't talk to their parents about it or not comfortable, and they don't want to talk to a teacher that they see all the time about sensitive personal stuff and ask questions. And having somebody come in from outside and not being there again the next day is maybe a great benefit for kids to get accurate answers to their questions. I think we've addressed some of the personal private times with the amendment, so it won't. But the notion that children won't do the things we tell them not to do is just a fallacy. You know, we can persuade them, we can cajole them, we can threaten them. But I mean, my own daughter was about 11 or 12, and she said to me, "You know, parents really don't have any power, do they? It's only if the kids let them." And that is the reality of law, because we all know, if we're parents, we know that's true. You don't have power. We think we do. So what we want to do is prevent unwanted pregnancies. We want to reduce chlamydia rates and other diseases. We want children to know how to protect themselves. We want them to know how to identify unhealthy relationships and what to do when those happen. I mean, that isn't necessarily a sexual relationship, but when somebody's a bully, when somebody's pressuring another person to be sexually involved and they don't want to, all of those kinds of things. And I think we want to talk to kids, and I don't think this bill helps us. I think it moves us backwards on those efforts. So, vote no.
Thank you. I'm going to be brief. The bill does not prevent the state or school districts from teaching on sex education. We just passed the bill last year over the objections of some school districts regarding HB 44. We felt at this level that it was so important that we were going to pass it. We passed it. There's over 236 pages in the AS 1400s, which is school law, in which the legislature has passed laws. Going back to 1966, to some degree, the issue of what is taught in our schools has been discussed. And so it's not unheard of. Just had it last year for the legislature to pass a law if they deem it is as important. This does not prevent anyone or any, excuse me, this does not prevent any teacher, any school district from providing sex ed. And as a matter of fact, as a result of discussions last year and as a result of discussions involving the different statistics we're hearing, certainly this discussion is going to gain more traction. I think it needs to, and I think it needs to involve just more than the schools, because I think what's happening with the schools is they're becoming policing agencies for everybody. I think this is an issue that's much broader than that. I think law enforcement needs to be brought into this discussion. I believe the Department of Health and Social Services needs to be brought in this discussion. It's a big discussion. But this bill does not prevent those discussions, that education, from happening in our public schools. Any other comments before we vote? Seeing none, Nancy, could you call the roll, please?
Senator Huggins.
Yes.
Senator Diesel.
Yes.
Senator Gardner.
No.
Senator Stevens.
No.
Chair Dunleavy.
Yes. So with that, the motion passes. It moves on to the next committee of referral. We're going to take a quick at ease to get ready for the next two bills. We're back in session. I think did I skip over something? We're going to do Grace's bill here. HB 76, Governor's Council on Disabilities. Sorry back there. Do we have public testimony was open? Do we have additional public testimony on this bill?
Anyone online?
Just for questions. Okay. Do we have any questions online? We have Christine Reinhart. She was on last week. Do we have any questions for Ms. Reinhart? Seeing none, anyone in the room that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. What is the role of the committee? We've heard the bill. It's a simple bill. It removes a small bit of language and brings it up to date. Is there a motion to move the bill?
Chairman, I move that House Bill number 76, version alpha, with individual comments and zero fiscal note, be moved from committee.
Any objections? Seeing none, the bill is moved to the next committee of referral. We're going to take just a quick break. Session. Next bill is 190, exemptions from the post-secondary ed regulations. This is, we took this bill up on March 10th. Public testimony is still open. Is there anyone online that wishes to testify on this bill? No one online. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Please come forward, state your name for the record, whom you're with, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify on this bill. My name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, the state agency that is statutorily tasked with regulating institutions to operate in Alaska. Basically, what I'd like to do is just add to the written testimony that I provided for the first hearing on this bill. While I understand the objective of the bill has a very narrow scope in terms of the particular type of institution that exemption is being sought for, the structure of this bill actually creates a new category of exemption that is could be quite wide in scope. And so the concern we have is that the objective of authorizing institutions to operate is to ensure that for those fields that are vocational in nature, that there is some standards in place that are reviewed that ensure the health and safety of the consumer, that ensure that the institutions are fiscally sound, to ensure that the personnel delivering the training meet certain relevant standards, and to ensure that the student is appropriately advised of the likelihood of the vocational training actually leading to gainful employment. And so by exempting a category of schools that is basically premised on if the state does not regulate the occupation or profession of the individual who receives the training or completes the training, it leaves a pretty wide swatch of programs that would have no oversight, no regulation, and therefore could really lead to some abuse in the system. And I did take the opportunity to review the hearing archive from last Thursday's meeting and understood that there were some questions that committee members had about what types of programs would fall into this new exempt category. As you know, it basically says that unless occupation or profession is regulated under Alaska Statutes 08, they would be exempt if it's a certificate program. So we did a little bit of looking at the programs that are currently authorized that would no longer be. For instance, at Charter College, computer technician, media, medical office, administrative assistant, hospitality, medical assistant, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, refrigeration, paralegal, welding, business administration, phlebotomy at the Alaska Career College, insurance coding and billing, aircraft dispatching. So for some schools, for instance, the Alaska Career College, the only certificate program they offered that would be subject to authorization is massage therapy because it is a licensed occupation in the state. So it gives you kind of a flavor of how broad this would be and the risks associated in states where you do not regulate in these areas. It's an opportunity for individuals to come in, assess fees, charge tuition and fees that the consumer believes will actually lead to gainful employment, but in fact the substance of the course or the delivery of the course is such that they can't accomplish that outcome. So I have other information that I can share with you, but I know you've heard this bill before. You have my written concerns on the record, and I would just make myself available for questions.
Any questions for Ms. Banks? Senator Diesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify, I believe you said certified medical assistant program would not be covered.
Through the chair, Senator Diesel, medical office administrative assistant and medical assistant would not be. Those are not regulated currently.
Okay.
As occupations or professions. Lobotomy is the other in the health area.
Mm-hmm. Just adding a comment, medical assistants actually staff offices. They're very prevalent in offices. And in fact, in pediatric offices, they're the ones administering vaccines to children. I've personally been in a clinic where the medical assistants made a significant error and an unknown number of children received the wrong vaccinations. They are not a regulated entity, occupation. Thank you for the word. Thank you.
Additional questions from Ms. Byrne?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Stevens.
Help me understand this. So currently we do regulate phlebotomists, right?
Yes, we do, through the chair, Senator Stevens.
And your concern is that this would unregulate phlebotomists.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. That would be the result of this.
Do you have any recommendations on how we get out of this? And I mean, it seems to me like it makes sense not to have yoga teachers have to go through all of this. How can we get out of this situation we're in?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we actually have four yoga teacher training programs that are already authorized in the state. One of them is a program at the Alaska Pacific University. But I know that the yoga teacher training programs are a relatively new vocational area in Alaska, has been, I think, the testimony before this committee. The concern, I think, that we would have is that if there are individuals who are actually taking the teacher training program to teach yoga as a profession, it's been anecdotally reported that the students interested in the program that I think brought the Yoga Alliance's attention to Alaska, that they simply don't. They're trying to intensify their practice. They might be substitute teachers. They don't really intend for it to be their primary source of income. I'm not sure that's always the case. In discussions, because the Yoga Alliance has had ongoing discussions with institutional authorization staff. We've talked about, you know, if they don't title the program yoga teacher training, if there are disclosures to the students that they acknowledge in writing that it is not to prepare them for professional teaching. Those were accommodations that they felt they could not make in order to be considered exempt under current regulatory exemptions. So, you know, one approach could be simply to call out in statute yoga teacher training as an exempt area. I'm not sure there might be a way of describing the conditions that apply in this case. We haven't been asked to submit language like that or to offer amendment language, so we have not developed anything. Mr. Chair, Senator Stevens, in answer to your question.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, my understanding of yoga is pretty limited, but it does seem to be that's not really a career. I mean, not like being a phlebotomist, is it? I mean, are there jobs out there? I mean, it seems to me the yoga teachers I've seen are all sort of volunteers. And
through the chair, Senator Stevens, it is a profession. But I believe the testimony, I would agree with the testimony previously made, is that usually you have to be sort of a sole practitioner or part of a partner, a practice where you offer multiple types of training, whether that's in a fitness, a gym setting, or some other yoga studio. But typically it is a small business operation, as is the case with three of the four programs that are already authorized in Alaska. They have yoga studios where they actually teach yoga classes, and then they have small yoga teacher training that goes along with that.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest that we can make use of Ms. Barron's knowledge and experience and come up with some wording here that might make sense. It seems to me that, I just recommend that.
Additional questions? Senators, Senator Gardner.
I don't have additional questions. It's a comment that perhaps the sponsor could come up with some language that addresses the concerns raised here.
Can we have the sponsors come back up? Do the sponsors want to come back?
Just a question for the sponsors. Could you identify yourself for the record one more time, please?
Trevi Terris, staffer, Senator McGuire.
And Diane Bluma, staffer, Senator McGuire.
Do you have any comments on what was just mentioned, and would you want to spend a day having a discussion and see if that discussion takes care of any potential issues?
Chair Dunleavy, this is Diane Bloomer for the record. We're more than happy to do that. We originally came forward with more narrow language, but because of the concern about other avocational type or recreational type of instructors or training, we thought we would broaden that. So we're happy to have a conversation with post-secondary education to find some language. I originally thought that this was covered already under the exemptions, and it's an interpretation issue. So I'm happy to have those conversations and come back to you with maybe more narrow language.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll lay the bill aside here for a day. We'll pick it up again on Thursday. You can have the discussion. You know, again, my philosophy, there's nothing wrong with amending the bill. Senator Gardner helps me amend my bills all the time.
And, I try.
So we'll lay it aside. We'll pick it up on Thursday.
Sounds great.
Okay. So with that, we're going to adjourn for the day. And Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you. She has her back to us. She's now turning around. Her name is Diane Behrens. I heard a rumor that Diane was looking to retire, maybe. Is that a true rumor? Maybe? Yeah. You know, I think we've all had a chance to sit on this side of this divide and talk to people there, and I can't think of anybody that consistently has had the bearing, the credibility, subject matter expert that would rival Diane Behrens and do it with a straight face, smile every once in a while, but you could take whatever she said to the bank because she could back up what she said. And I think today was an example of that. So, Diane, that's a left-handed way of a guy from Wasilla saying we're proud to know you, we're proud to have known you, and we hold you in high regard. Yeah, thank you.
I hope you're not gone yet. You'll be with us for a little while longer, correct? Okay, good. So hopefully we'll see you on Thursday. Okay. With that, we're going to adjourn and the meeting.